Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, 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 it is, my friends. It is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN at 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN, with you for the next 2 hours. And so much to do over the course of the next 2 hours. And we start with Sam Darnold right out of the gate. And quite simply, I am a long way to losing faith in Darnold as the guy long term. And after yesterday, I don't think he's the guy. Look, the questions are very, very real when it comes to the New York Jets and the quarterback position. You can deny all you want. You can talk about what they didn't have last year. You can talk about the fact that they've never put anybody in place to help him at the receiver position. Hit anything you want to. What we saw in Buffalo was alarming, to say the least, yesterday. And it made me believe that Sam's not the guy for the long haul with the Jets. And the reason is this. What was happening out there, he didn't have much of a clue. We had heard all through the preseason that Sam was quicker to the ball. He was quicker to the play. He understood exactly where he was going with the football. He understood exactly what he was seeing, and everything was just coming so much quicker. You know what wasn't coming quicker? Oh, I don't know. Breaking the huddle out of a television timeout. That wasn't coming quicker. Decision-making wasn't coming quicker. Taking sacks he shouldn't be taking. Look, I get it's the Bills. The Bills are a very, very good to borderline great defensive team. And the Jet offensive line, reconstructed as it is, didn't exactly distinguish itself right out of the gate. But let's be clear. When you have as many missed opportunities as the Jets had yesterday, you have to be thrown off by that with Sam. You have to be. Tell me you watched that game and thought it was all about what he didn't have. And there were a couple of drop passes here and there by Jamison Crowder. There was also a couple of times where Jamison Crowder is wide open downfield and Sam ends up running out of bounds. There were opportunities to get rid of the football and deliver it on time, and it didn't happen. Missed throws. There were opportunities to make plays on the run. Remember when that was supposed to be such a big part of his game? A guy who could extend a play outside the pocket? Well, that's no good if you're not delivering the football to where it needs to go. And you saw early in that game, he wasn't. He was missing receivers when he was on the run. Yeah, a little bit under siege. But part of the Sam Darnold package is supposed to be that mobility, that ability to continue to keep hope alive on a play that might have been previously thought dead. Well, he keeps hope alive, but he takes it away pretty damn quickly. We had Brian Billick on here last week. We've had many other people say this, but this was just most recent. For a player, and most notably a quarterback, if it's not there in year three, it's probably never going to be there. This is a bad start. And I wanted to believe in all the good things with Sam. And maybe it'll show up. But right now, if I was on the fence in the middle about what he was going to be, even slightly optimistic, I have shifted way over to the other side. And frankly, now I'm going to be surprised if he turns into a very good quarterback. And you might be saying it's too early. It's not. It's year three. It's about elevating your teammates. It's about making plays and keeping your team in a game that, frankly, they were getting their tails beat. And the only reason that they were in the game to begin with wasn't because of Sam. It was because the Bills, as good as they are, played poorly and still were steamrolling them. And we all know that game was not nearly as close as the score would indicate. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time with Sam you looked at it and said, wow, what an unbelievable play that was? He makes some nice throws here and there. That happens. The over-his-shoulder catch by Le'Veon Bell is a nice throw. He is capable of doing that. But I don't know how running to your left as a right-handed quarterback and turning and throwing the ball across your body to the middle of the field can ever be considered a great play. It can only be considered a disastrous decision. And that's what it is. And the disastrous decisions are the things that are supposed to be gone. It's one thing if you're not making massive plays all over the place. It's another when you can't eliminate the big, big, big problem. And he hasn't done that. I can't get over how so much was stressed about being in Adam Gase's offense for a second year and his ability to see things just so much quicker and so much better and understand what they were doing right away. And then yesterday, just have all of that disappear so quickly. You want to talk about no preseason games? Okay. You want to talk about the fact that, you know, it was live for the first time? Fine. This is not the first time the guy has gotten on an NFL field. It's not. It's the 27th time. Game number 27 for Sam Darnold. These are when these numbers start to count and start to get eerie. And when I told you a month or two back that the worst position you can be in is to be in one that would have you thinking about the Bears and Mitch Trubisky at the end of the year and actually having to make a decision on whether or not you're going to keep Sam for the long term or whether or not you're even going to pick up the option for the fifth year. All problems. The Jets have problems at the quarterback position. And it's not getting fixed overnight. The quarterback whisperer of a head coach could be screaming into his ear. And it's not changing right now. That has to go away. The horrible decisions have to go away for there to be real progress made. I see no progress. Game one, overreaction city, panic city. No, not panic city. Alarmed. I'm alarmed at what's going on. It's not panicking over one game. It's panicking over 27. Being alarmed over 27.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. We're beautiful.
Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. Carlin until 10 o'clock tonight. At 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Get back to the phones in just a moment. But we have to spend a few minutes here on the head coach. And I started with Sam tonight because that's the more alarming thing to me. That's more about the guy that is going to be here longer and that you have to see show that he is going to lead your franchise. What we have already seen from Adam Gase is that he is not going to be the guy to lead this franchise. I have contended this since Gase was hired, and frankly, many other times over the last 10 years. When you hire a head coach that just got fired, you are in essence telling that head coach that nothing that just happened was your fault. nothing that just happened had anything to do with you. They didn't give you the right players. They didn't have the right front office in place. What you're doing is saying, God, we're fortunate to get you that quickly, but they fired you because you're a great coach. And Adam Gase is not the only one that has fallen into this category. And frankly, the Jets have been involved in this a little bit too often, frankly, on both ends. Rex Ryan gets fired by the Jets, gets hired by the Bills. What happens? He's gone in 2 years. Eric Mangini gets fired by the Jets, gets hired by Cleveland. He's gone in a year. John Fox gets fired by Denver, a team he had taken to the Super Bowl, gets hired immediately by Chicago, gone in a couple of years. Chip Kelly, fired by the Eagles, immediately hired by the 49ers, gone in a year. Rich Kotite, fired by the Eagles, hired by the Jets, gone in 2 years. There's really been one guy that it has ultimately worked out for, and it may work out for another guy. And that guy was Andy Reid, who had won a ton of games in Philadelphia, and time just kind of got to the point where they had to move on, and they needed a new voice. And that's what happened with Andy Reid there. So he goes to Kansas City and ends up winning his Super Bowl. But we all knew Andy Reid was a Hall of Fame coach before he won the Super Bowl. The other guy we'll see is Ron Rivera, who's a pretty good coach in Carolina. But we'll see what happens in D.C. They obviously got off to a good start. Point is this. You are arming that head coach with the mentality right out of the gate when you hire him right after he got fired, not to change a damn thing of what he was doing. Not to even look at why you got fired. There's no self-evaluation in there. You know, coaches talk so much about how they fall in love with the process of getting better and wanting to be better and evaluating what you're doing. What over the last year plus has made you think that Adam Gase has done anything to evaluate himself in how to get better? I don't know if this is the case behind the scenes, okay? This is purely me speculating by the personality at times of the head coach. But Adam Gase has more of a personality that feels like he is pointing the finger instead of the thumb as to things that go wrong. Some of that happened yesterday. Sam making some throws he just can't make, that kind of thing. Some of that happened yesterday. But this is why it was wrong to go down this path with Adam Gase. It was just someone who had not had a lot of success inside the division. You saw it up close and personal. And while you could make the excuses about he didn't have Ryan Tannehill for half of the games that he was there, you can always find reasons for something that didn't work. You know, when a coach gets a year off after they're fired, you know, maybe they'll go into broadcasting. More often than not, they take a year and they take some time and they evaluate how to get better. You know what they do? They actually travel around to see how other football programs are run, be it in college or in the pros. They go see their friends who are coaches, who are head coaches at big-time programs or at big-time or at NFL level. And they spend time there and say, they do this. Maybe I can get better doing this. Maybe I'm going to steal this drill. Maybe this would help me get better as a head coach so that the next time around, I'll know what I need to avoid. I just think that when you're in the position of hiring a head coach and you take somebody right away that got fired, if they're not already a Hall of Famer, you're making a mistake. You're making a mistake. Anthony in Queens next on 98.7 ESPN. Anthony, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Carlin? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Tone. What do you got, buddy?
Well, I'm listening to all the conversation. I just parked my car and just went and came into my apartment. So I'm listening to all the conversations. Everybody's making valid points. What I will agree with you as far as Adam Gase and Sam Darnold is concerned, it's probably two separate conversations, even though they collide and they obviously meet. But Sam Darnold is, one of the questions I wanted to ask you about Sam Darnold is, if he hasn't progressed, obviously, that was evident Sunday, and he hasn't really regressed, which people may be debating, my thinking is maybe he's what one of my coworkers told me years ago, maybe he has plateaued. He reached a point where he can't go any further. So I don't know if you would agree with that or not, because I don't see anything that's wowing me. And then just before I made the call, I was looking at Sam Darnold's draft class. And I was looking at, obviously, the draft before and the draft after. The Jets are looking like a football version of the Knicks to me. Would you agree or not?
Oh, boy.
I mean, think about it.
It's hard not to agree. It really is. And listen, let's be clear, Anthony. I believe that Joe Douglas is the right guy to fix the Jets. And he's going to have plenty of opportunities to do it. Okay? I'm fully on board with Joe Douglas. I'm not with the head coach. And right now, I am teetering with the quarterback at best. Teetering.
Okay. What about the Jets draft picks over there? Now, I do understand
the draft picks over the years before. Now, this was Douglas's first draft. The Jets draft picks over the years, over the last 10 years, it's been a disaster.
Oh, that's true.
Outside of a couple, you know, Jamal was obviously a great draft pick. And I'll get to him in a minute. But, you know, you want to point to a bunch of others and talk about how great they are? There are not a lot of great ones.
No, I mean, you think about, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right about that. But they did have, I wouldn't say they didn't have subpar talent. They did have players that could have been developed. And I did see some, I don't know
but
if you agree or not,
like
I did see some
a lot of
nice
those players,
things in May
but
yesterday.
Here, Anthony, here's the problem. It's not like you saw a lot of those players, and thanks for the call, go somewhere else and get developed. They didn't go somewhere else and turn into stars. And I'm not even going down to the Christian Hackenberg route. You know? I think you've seen that the Jets, specifically under Mike Maccagnan, just did not draft particularly well. They really didn't. I guess we all kind of figured out why Leonard Williams dropped to the sixth spot, huh? Remember when that was like, oh my God, I can't believe he fell to six and it took him well. We found out why. Jamal Marcus May was a good pick, as it turns out. And speaking of Jamal, I mean, seriously, just shut up. You got to take shots when you get there. Oh, I'm not used to my team scoring 30-some points. You got to fire back at Greg Williams because Greg Williams said you might be a little bit bored in what they do. Here's what I saw. One of the very small bright spots yesterday was the fact that the Jets did not miss Jamal Adams in the least. Marcus May slid into the Jamal Adams role and had two sacks and knocked down two passes. And had probably had an opportunity to get a couple of other sacks. I mean, he was damn good yesterday. Call that what it is. So, Jamal, honestly, just leave them in the rearview mirror. You got what you wanted. Stop complaining. Go away. We're done. We'll see you when you play the Jets. I'm sure he'll be running his mouth a ton that week, and it's going to be so tough to do that when you're playing up in Seattle, and, you know, even if the home crowd isn't there, they'd be piping it in anyway. Stop. I used to my team scoring 30-some points. Stop. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. News on a Jet weapon. And I'm using air quotes. And why the Jets will not be getting his services for quite some time. Using his services. We'll tell you about that coming up. Open lines at 800-919-3776. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. You're listening to Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. Jim, mother, can you hear me whining?
It's been 3 weeks since I have adored him. Rejoice. For on this day, a Savior is born. His name, Steve Cohen. The deal is done. All that needs to happen now, 3 brilliant days in November, an approval must come forth. And it might feel as if it's coming from a little town of Bethlehem, but I'm assuming that they're in somewhere in Florida this year. I don't know where the owners' meetings are, but that's what's left. Steve Cohen needs 23 votes of the 30 major league owners to become the new owner of the New York Mets. The deal was consummated today between the Wilpons and Cohen. He will own 95% of the team, and he will purchase it for $2.42 billion. First things first. Now, remember that this was supposed to be roughly $2.6 billion that he was going to pay the first time around. So by walking away and coming back, he saved $200 million. That's pretty damn impressive. But more importantly, assuming that everything goes through, your long Flushing nightmare will come to a close. First of all, let me say this. On a personal level, I hate that it ends with everybody having these feelings, because I have to tell you, in my 8.5, 9 years at SNY, Fred and Jeff Wilpon were nothing but great to me. And Jeff, or rather Fred, specifically, was a big backer of mine. And very nice man to me. Really a class act in a lot of ways. And we spoke after I left in 2016. And I saw him again a couple of years later. And I really do like Fred, and I don't have anything against Jeff personally. He and I got along fine. I just think when Jeff was running this team and Fred was not willing to spend as much, Jeff was not willing to spend as much, and everything that happened from 2009 on, this was just an utter disaster that was really never getting better. And I understand that they went to the World Series in 2015, but these days coming up in November are more important to the Mets fan than any games that have been played in October in 15 years, easily. This had to happen because this franchise has been stuck in the Wilpon mud for quite some time. The fact that I like them on a personal level does not excuse what's gone on an ownership level. And it's been nothing short of a mess for years and years. And to have a team like this that every season was just asking you to bank on that four-letter word, hope, it just was so, so unfair in so many ways. You can't keep asking your fans to do that. You can't keep asking your fans to just pray and try to catch lightning in a bottle. Any way you want to put it. Hope has been a very dangerous thing for the Mets.
Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope can drive a man insane.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways it has. For a lot of fans. So there is an awful lot of rejoicing on social media tonight, as there should be. And assuming this gets done, and let's just be clear on this. It's not a lock that the approval happens. There are two things that are really going to hold it up. Number one, and this is the most important thing, is that the other owners are going to sit there and look at Steve Cohen and worry that he is going to break the bank and spend a ridiculous amount of money and, in essence, break the system that they have tried to put in place for so long and be that owner that is irresponsible with money. Well, you don't get to be somebody with $14 billion by being irresponsible with money or being stupid. The other thing is, obviously, they will, as, and I hate to put it this way, but it's true. If they do have that concern, and it's big enough that they don't want to improve them as owners, approve Steve Cohen and company as owners, they will use the insider trading charges from years ago and the harassment charges, harassment claims that are going against his firm right now as an excuse to not make that happen. That won't be anything out of true moral problems with it. Trust me. Go look at the history of some of the owners. Moral issues have never been a concern before. So let's not pretend that they are now. You're just afraid that he's going to go out there and outspend everybody else and do it in an irresponsible way. I think he'll get approved. And I don't think, to be honest, that he's going to walk in and just open the checkbook and said, here you go, fellas, have at it. I think he'll come in. I think he'll move on from management. Maybe he keeps Luis Rojas, who knows. Maybe he brings in a GM and lets that GM pick his own manager. I would fully expect that Brody would be gone. I would fully expect that they would just clean house across the board in so many ways and try to get the bad taste out of a lot of people's mouths. And, you know, there are really good people that work for the organization, and I would hate to see that, but I think it's something that's going to happen in a lot of departments. Now, more than anything else, if you are expecting him to come in and do that and just open up that door, open up that checkbook and let everybody go to town, I would caution that that probably is not going to come right away. I think in a more likely scenario, it is, we'll get better incrementally, but we need to get the whole operation better first. I don't think he's going to sit on money. I don't think he's going to let an opportunity pass him by. I think the Mets will be in play on the big-time free agents that they need to be in play on. But I don't think it's going to be all at once. You have to wait to see how the collective bargaining agreement works out. I don't think you're going to see the winter meetings this year all of a sudden turn into a massive, massive spending spree for the Mets. I don't foresee any of that. What I do see is an organization that will be on the right track and will be run in a much more responsible fashion and in a way that will get them back toward working toward a championship. Your long Flushing nightmare is close to being over. Never closer than on this very night, the 14th of September, 2020. And for everybody that has bemoaned the year 2020, there is at least one group of fans that can look at it at the end of it and say, the short season, staying home, just on a personal level, not of everything awful that's happened in the world, at least they'll be able to see some brighter skies. And those people will be the Met fans. Come the middle of November and those few ownership days. How excited are you right now, Mets fans?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
NFL calls, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Call about the Giants in the middle of the game as well as you, if you wish. Giants went on an 87-yard drive and turned it over at the goal line. Bud Dupree hitting Daniel Jones as he was throwing the football. Meanwhile, Pittsburgh is now into Giants territory. But oh my, oh, was somebody rolling tape on this? Leonard Williams just got a sack. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. They should start scrolling on the bottom of the game. Breaking news! Leonard Williams got a sack! We did it! Yes, we can! Richard in Manhattan. Richard, I have to fire up the music! Have at it, brother.
Chris, did you watch the Dallas LA Ram game last night?
I did.
That was one of the greatest opening day games I've ever seen. And I hate indoor football. I mean, it was hard hitting, well played. That was like a playoff game.
That was an excellent game. You're right. I would agree with
that. Now, I was falling asleep at the end. Did McCarthy shun the field goal at fourth and three at the 11?
With a lot of time left. With a lot of time left as well, Richard, he did. And he could have tied the game up at 20 and instead decided to go for it. Made absolutely no sense.
Chris,
not only that, Richard, they threw it to CeeDee Lamb, who on the fourth and three ran a 2-yard route.
Chris, in the old days, you never saw that. Ever. Ever. I mean, I know they do it now.
You saw it last night, Richard.
Now and that, you know, they do it now and then, But 30 years ago and before, you never. He should be killed for that. Killed.
Well,
he gave the game away. There was no excuse for giving that.
Well, Richard, he's been getting filleted all day for it. Not actually killed, but filleted. You know, ripped up and down. He's been getting hammered for it all day.
And they didn't. And really, Dallas got outplayed that game. Any chance that they had to tie at that point would have given him a little life. That was awful because L.A. looked great. They looked fantastic. They were rotating those three running backs. That was a great game. It was one of the best games I've ever seen opening day. Chris, always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Richard. That was nice and quick and painless and, well, I mean, painless, you know, to a degree, I guess, you know. In Richard terms, painless? Yeah, sure. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. You know, I want to spend a few minutes here on Gary Sanchez. And I think there's a very interesting scenario that is starting to play out. What am I talking about? Well, quite simply, it's this. Is Gary Sanchez going to be a New York Yankee in 2021? At this point, I am convinced that the answer to that is no. Here's why. Have you noticed lately that we've seen less of him? And yes, he's been struggling at the plate. But we've seen less of him in a very specific situation. What am I talking about? Remember early in the year, first game of the year, in fact, Gerrit Cole on the mound, Gary Sanchez behind the plate, and Gerrit Cole's talking about how much he loves Gary Sanchez and how well they work together behind the plate on the whole night. And every time that he went out there and pitched well, he was just over-the-top complimentary of what Sanchez was doing. This is Gerrit Cole, $324 million that they paid this offseason. Gerrit Cole is going to get what Gerrit Cole wants when it comes to a catcher. But it was clear that they wanted the two of them to work together for a while. And then, in the last two starts, Kyle Higashioka has been out there. Interesting. Now, in the first of those two starts, didn't go great. He ended up giving up, what, 5-6 runs? Only one of them was earned. But it didn't go well at all. And then, the first game of the doubleheader on Friday night against the Orioles, he was absolutely brilliant. 7 shutout innings in getting to win a complete game, being the 7-inning doubleheader. And Higashioka was with him that night. I'm very curious. Is Kyle Higashioka going to be behind the plate on Wednesday night? Because if that happens in three consecutive starts for Gerrit Cole, there is something to that. You know, maybe all of the talk about the pitch framing, about the defense improving, about calling games, you know, maybe a lot of it was just that. Maybe it was just talk. It was Cole coming in, wanting to be a good teammate, doing all the right things, and ultimately calling the game himself that he wanted to call. That's why he's here. If Gary Sanchez is not in the lineup on Wednesday, catching, it will confirm my suspicions. Gary Sanchez is not going to be a Yankee next year. I'm fully convinced of that right now. I think we have seen enough. I think the Yankees have seen enough. If you're Brian Cashman at this juncture in Gary Sanchez's career, you have ridden this out as long as you can. We know what the power numbers are. But if you have absolutely no concept of when he's going to be any form of consistent or when home runs might actually start to come in bunches, which they haven't this year, then what are we doing here if he's not a good defensive catcher? You can't DH him if he doesn't hit well enough. And if he's not catching well enough, you can't keep him. Now, I'm not saying they're going to non-tender Gary Sanchez. Of course not. That would be ridiculous. But I absolutely believe that Sanchez will be traded, because you're going to end up coming out of this season, he'll be arbitration eligible again. He made $5 million this year. Is that number going to jump to 15? It's not. That number may go up a couple million, but it really shouldn't, as we know. And the Yankees are going to be in a position where they could trade him. What's going to be unfortunate is they're never going to get the return that they once might have. You know, had they done it a couple of years ago when they were pursuing JT Realmuto. That's who the Marlins wanted, and the Yankees said absolutely not. And you understood why at the time. Hindsight being 20/20, there's no question who you would rather have right now. Realmuto is special behind the plate, and yes, he's older. He's, what, 31 and going to be a free agent. But if he's available this offseason, I don't know that they're going to break the bank for him. I don't know what that looks like this offseason for Realmuto at 31. Is that a five-year deal for $100-plus million? It very well might be. And he's an excellent offensive player. And he's also a great, great defender. It depends what they think they have left in him when they get him defensively. There's a strong chance that Realmuto does not re-up in Philadelphia. I mean, there's already been the story that he's waiting for the Steve Cohen offer from the Mets. But keep this in mind about him. He's somebody that any pitcher on the Yankees would be more than thrilled to be thrown to. Would be more than thrilled to have behind the plate in terms of blocking balls. Nobody would ever have any hesitance about throwing a ball in the dirt, knowing that he's going to get in front of it. And his offense is excellent. He's hitting cleanup for a while for the Phillies. Had to check and see where he's been hitting lately. He may still be. He's a very good player. But the Mets may be in on him this offseason, and the Yankees very well may be too. I'm telling you, Gary Sanchez not going to be a Yankee next year. I 150% believe that to be the case. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. I did mention that earlier today on Monday's edition of Savages in the Box, which is, of course, our daily Yankee podcast. 15, 20 minutes of some hard-hitting analysis, maybe some sound from players and Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman and whomever, but really just trying to break things down for you without breaking things down. What that means, I have no freaking idea of what I just said. But I like to think it's an entertaining little podcast that you get Monday through Friday. We will not have a fresh one tomorrow with no game tonight, but most days you get it. If there's no game, generally, next game, maybe not. But I've had a lot of fun doing it. And by all means, if you subscribe to Carlin on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you get Savages in the Box in there, and it's an absolute blast. So by all means, and by the way, you get the best of this show too. So go there, subscribe, rate, write some reviews. Tell me what's good and what's not good, because I want to know. Get it all to me, because I am somebody that craves feedback. I need to know what you think of me, good or bad. I need to know.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.